From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunuth Jij, Hawa, Toyoksuk Nusum, Salamat for joining the conversation. On today's show, we'll meet human rights lawyer Haben Girma, who advances disability justice. She's the author of Haben, the Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law, and will speak tomorrow night at the Mendenhall Library. We'll find out how you can run for local office. It's a workshop from the League of Women Voters happening very soon. And summer is so close, and Kindred Post is celebrating tomorrow with their first ever summer kickoff. Those conversations, Tongass voices, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Just a quick note before we start today. Have you ever wondered how KTOO came to be? Tune in on the radio or online for a special two-hour edition of Juno Afternoon this Friday, May 3rd from 2 to 4 p.m. for a kickoff celebration honoring 50 years of KTOO. And if you're in Juno, you can join us after the show for an open house right here at 360 Egan Drive starting at 4 p.m. We'll have refreshments and items will be all over the building displaying different things from KTOO's history. That's this Friday, May 3rd, starting at 2 p.m. right here on KTOO.org. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tomorrow night, you'll hear tales of adventure from around the world, from Haben Girma, from family homes in Eritrea and Ethiopia on the continent of Africa, building schools in the Saharan sun, teasing President Obama about his typing skills, and climbing an iceberg right here in Alaska. Haben's stories are generous, uplifting, and funny. Her memoir is called Haben, the Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law, and she will be at the Mendenhall Library tomorrow night, May 1st at 5:30 p.m. It's free and open to the public. You can read more about Haben at her website, Haben Girma, that's HabenGirma.com. It's a pleasure to welcome now to Studio 2K, Haben Girma, along with her translator, Gordon Burns, and Milo, the world-traveling seeing-eye dog. Gunuth Jij, Haye Adi, thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Hey, Boston, and hello, Juno. So it's going amazing here. I want to quickly talk about communication. Folks listening to this will notice a delay between when Boston speaks and when I speak. And the reason is I'm not hearing Boston. I'm getting his words in Braille. So they're being typed on a keyboard. Then they're converted to Braille on my Braille computer. I'm reading them and responding by voice. Part of accessibility is patience, giving time for all our different kinds of voices, whether we have accents, whether we're using sign language, whether we're using computer-aided communication. So sometimes patience is an asset. What do you think, Boston?
I think patience is the key to life.
Very true. For lots of things, even beyond radio.
For sure. For sure. All right. So I have a lot of questions for you. And the first one is, we have to talk about your Alaska journey and the iceberg. So will you tell us this tale of the time you spent in Alaska and climbing this iceberg?
Yes, it happened one winter. Mendenhall Lake was frozen. And my friends here in Juneau, Gordon and Sam, they all told me how they loved walking across that lake in the winter and having adventures. And I let them lead the way and joined them. This was my first time walking on ice. As someone from California, it was a very new experience, and it was thrilling. It was also thrilling for my guide dog. This was my guide dog, Maxine, my first seeing eye guide dog, and she joined me on that trip to Alaska. She was a little hesitant at the ice at first, but then was totally calm until we got to the iceberg. Then she panicked. She started following me up the iceberg. And I realized that's not safe. She should get hurt. She could get hurt. So I started climbing backwards, back down. So you might be wondering, how did I notice all this? When Maxine and I walk together, I'm holding a harness that goes around her body. And when she steps forward, turns, stops, I feel that through the harness. So we have that physical connection. And I had her stay at the bottom of the iceberg when I started to climb. And I noticed she was not staying. I could feel her moving next to me, coming and going past me. So I got back down. And I asked our friend Sam to hold her leash and make sure she stayed safe as I continued up the iceberg. I have experience bouldering and rock climbing. I did that a lot when I was in high school back in California. So climbing up the iceberg felt a little like that. You reach up with your hands and you don't see what's up ahead, but you can feel what's up ahead. And you use your hands to find holds. And later, your feet will remember where your hands were and can find those same positions as you go up. And it was not vertical. It was very curved. So it wasn't too difficult compared to like bouldering in the bouldering gyms. So we made it to the top, and this was a very interesting iceberg in the sense that while it was very curved on one side, on the other side, it was very smooth and steep, like a slide. So Gordon went first, and he slid down. I crawled over to the starting point of the slide, and at that point, I started hearing sounds. It sounded like Gordon and Sam were shouting instructions to me, but I couldn't quite hear what they were saying. Deaf blindness is a spectrum, different levels of vision and hearing, which means deaf blind people around the world also have different communication styles. Some use sign language. It could be close up if they have enough vision to see close up signing. It could be tactile signing. So if they don't see close up signing, they'll put their hands over people's hands and feel signing. My vision and hearing have been decreasing ever since I was a little girl. And it's been subtle, so I don't always notice it. But over the years, I can notice, hey, I used to be able to hear that, and now I can't hear that. So it's challenging to predict in new situations. What am I going to be able to hear or see? And what tactile solutions will I need to come up with? So I didn't know I would have this challenge on top of an iceberg. And we didn't have a communication system planned. So I knew they were trying to communicate something to me, but I couldn't get it. And I thought about what I could do, and it seemed like the best thing to do was just go down. So I prepared, I put my feet in front of me, and pushed off and slid down the iceberg. It was pretty fun. When I reached the bottom, Maxine came bounding over. She was so happy I was back. Sam and Gordon came over and they said, "We asked you to stop. We wanted you to get ready for our camera to be ready to film you." So we didn't catch it on film. But I'm glad that that was all they were trying to communicate and it wasn't something worse.
Well, I'm glad you were safe. So it's not your first time in Alaska, in Juneau, even.
No, I've been here several times. We've had lots of adventures here. The dog with me today is Milo. He's my second seeing eye dog. And he's also been to Juneau before. This is his second time in Juneau.
That's so awesome. Milo's resting peacefully over there. I love that. I want to ask you about your social media presence. Because speaking of Milo and the seeing eye dog, I think your last post on Instagram was about Seeing Eye and the organization Seeing Eye. And I think it was Guide Dog Day recently, maybe, is what you were posting about. But I want to ask you about social media and how you, because I know another post on there, you were talking about accessibility and what people can do to make social media accounts more accessible.
Excellent question. So blind people can use apps and websites that are programmed for accessibility. And Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn have accessibility teams. So engineers who work to make sure the apps are as accessible as possible. I can read texts, hashtags. I cannot read photos. So to get access to photos, I need people to add image descriptions. And I do that with all my posts because I also have blind people who follow my posts and want to be able to learn from these stories. So I add image descriptions which describe what's in the photo. A picture's worth 1,000 words. Twitter gives you 1,000 characters to write that image description so blind people have access to the stories. So there are word character counts and word counts for many of these apps, but their alt text feature allows you to extend that so that you have enough room to write image descriptions. Another accessibility feature is captions. If you have videos, add captions so that deaf people, hard of hearing people get access to the captions. I can't see captions. I still advocate for captions because you may start out as a self-advocate, advocating for disability-specific accessibility needs for your own situation. But then over time, you transition to advocating for the greater community. So I advocate for lots of accessibility features that are not specific to deafblind people, but help the greater disability community. So add captions, image descriptions. What is very helpful for deafblind people are transcripts.
Excellent.
You have the images and the audio from the video. So those are three things for social media accessibility.
I love that. That's so great. The other thing, the next thing I want to ask you about is I know your book is full of humor, and in watching and learning about you more before this interview, you are so funny. And I just wonder, what kind of things make you laugh?
Surprising things make me laugh. The unexpected. So when you are disabled in an environment that's mostly designed for non-disabled people, your disability may come in conflict with an environment that wasn't designed for you. And that conflict can be opportunities for humor. And I have a lot of disabled people who have transformed potentially awkward things into funny, engaging stories. So when we're thoughtful and creative, we can find humor in any kind of situation.
Wow. I love that. That is so good. Now, I want to ask you a couple of questions about sort of traveling the world. And I know that makes your life really busy. And so I was just wondering, like, in the calmer moments of your day, what thoughts flow through you?
I feel very, very excited when I find something that's accessible. And it's often unexpected. So we went on a tour of a balsamic vinegar factory in Italy. And I was not expecting any accessibility features for blind people or deafblind people or even guide dog access. But they were incredibly welcoming. They say, of course you can touch this. And they let us touch the different equipment they use. They found a fossilized clump of 300-year-old balsamic vinegar. And they invited us to touch it and smell it. It smelled very sweet. Kind of vinegary, but still incredibly sweet. So those moments where you find spaces, places that maybe did not imagine you there, but still welcome you because of their attitude and their willingness to make things work, those types of things make me really happy.
That's really great. So the other thing I'm curious about is, I know you've been traveling all over, and have you found a memorable, I don't want to say favorite, but memorable food, like a favorite restaurant or spot that has a nice dish that you love?
So many, because food is one of the things I love about traveling. When I go somewhere, I want to try the food and learn new ways of experiencing the world. So, what can I share? There have been so many food experiences. I went to Portugal and fell in love with pastéis de nata. They are custard tarts that are, they come in different flavors. I love them with vanilla and cinnamon. So I have a sweet tooth, you might notice. So I'm a big fan of the desserts I find.
I love that. That's so good. You mentioned Portugal. Is there another favorite place that you have been to?
Spain has a surprising amount of accessibility. They have a very powerful blind organization called ONCE. And because of that organization, Spain has one of the highest employment rates for blind people. The other side of that is that when blind people in Spain want to get jobs outside of ONCE, outside of that industry, employers are like, why are you trying to get a job here? You could go work at ONCE, because people get the idea that blind people in Spain work at the lottery, selling lottery tickets. And when blind people want to get out of that, they feel pigeonholed and stuck. So it's kind of a catch-22. But they've done a lot of great work. There's a lot of Braille all over the country. You can walk into a grocery store and find shampoo bottles with Braille, wine bottles with Braille.
Wow. That's awesome. Wow. So I know that, you know, your book has so many adventures in it, and I know you're facing life at full speed. And I kind of want to ask you what your superhero origin story is. Basically, where does the courage and bravery live in you?
I grew up hearing stories from my parents about their journey to the United States. My mom grew up amidst the war between Eritrea and Ethiopia, and there was a lot of violence and fear. And she heard the stories of the United States being a place where people could dream and reach those dreams. And those stories gave her hope. And she took the difficult journey walking from Eritrea to Sudan. She spent several months as a refugee in Sudan and then came to the United States. And it was very, very challenging to build up her English skills, to figure out how do you go to school here? How do you get a job here? But she made it work. So I heard all those stories. They're not about deaf blindness, but it's about facing the unknown. And I also had to face the unknown, because as a deaf blind person in a world mostly designed for sighted hearing people, I had a lot of unknowns. There wasn't really a guide. How do you climb an iceberg when you're deaf blind? Now there is. You can find it in my book. But before that, I didn't know. So I faced a lot of unknowns, and my parents' stories gives me courage and resilience to keep paving out a path so I can face these unknowns.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the role models in your life, but I feel like the answer is your parents.
My parents, there are others too. There is a disabled storyteller, actor and comedian named Mezun Zayed, and she uses humor and storytelling to advocate for accessibility in the media industry and outside media. A lot of times stories about disabled people are told by non-disabled people. Just like there's mansplaining, there's ablesplaining. So we want to be able to create space in media for disabled storytellers, actors, comedians, to be able to share these stories. So she's doing that, and she's one of my role models.
That's awesome. I love that. Role models are so important. So what is your hope for the future?
My hope is that people listening to this program will feel inspired to take action. We can look around Juneau and examine what are some of the barriers for disabled people living in Juneau or disabled people visiting Juneau. And once we notice those barriers, can we take steps to remove them so that Juneau is more accessible for everyone? There are disabled people here, and also our bodies change as we age, and we deserve dignity and access at every stage in our lives. So it's also for our future selves and the whole community.
And how can an individual go about making our world more accessible?
Excellent question. Boston, I'd love for you to have more disabled people coming to the show and reaching out to the disabled community here in Juneau. There's an organization called SAIL that helps advocate and elevate issues related to the disabled community here in Juneau. And it also depends on what field people are in. So if someone's a teacher working at the schools here, what are some of the barriers for disabled students in Juneau? Help remove those barriers. Or if you're an architect in Juneau, ask what are some of the physical barriers in our spaces and how do we remove them?
Yeah, SAIL is a great organization. They have been on our program a number of times, and they have that great new building out on Teal Street. And you can find out more at sailinc.org about that organization if you're interested. And Haben, what are your plans for the future? Do you have any other adventures in mind?
Well, I am always on adventures. We have many, many adventures happening after this. We're going to Europe and going to spend a few weeks in the UK, Spain, and Sweden. I am interested in making our communities more accessible and also more connected. I am part of the World Health Organization's new Commission on Social Connection, because a lot of people are struggling with loneliness. Disabled people and non-disabled people are struggling with loneliness. And we want to identify what are some of the things that bring people together. And if disabled people are coming up with solutions, given that we already face so many barriers, maybe spotlighting some of those solutions will help the greater community.
Gunnath Cheesh, thank you so much for being here today, Haben. Your talk is tomorrow at Mendenhall Library. It's at 5:30 p.m., Wednesday, May 1st. It's free and open to the public. Haben will be talking about her book, and it is called Haben, the Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law. You will be able to meet her, and she'll be taking questions, I think, and also maybe, talking about and giving a talk about the book. You can find out more at her website, habengirma.com. It's HABENGIRMA.com. Thank you so much again for being here, Gunnath Cheesh.
Thank you so much for having us here. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Absolutely. Okay, coming up next, have you been interested in getting involved in local politics? Thought of running for office? The League of Women Voters has you covered with their upcoming seminar, How to Run for Local Office. But first, we have this week's Tongass Voices, a series from KTOO sharing weekly perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Malene Babcock, treasurer of the Gastineau Historical Society, has lived in Juneau for more than 80 years. Her personal story is deeply intertwined with the history of the city and the state. From the traumatic loss of her grandparents in Juneau's 1936 landslide to her long career studying salmon across the state, Babcock reflects on her life in Southeast Alaska. Here's Tongass Voices.
My grandparents, Hugo and Hilya Malene Peterson, were both killed in the building. And my mother, who was Lillian Peterson Babcock, survived. She was probably one of the first ones that was rescued because she was on the south end of the slide and right at the very edge when she was hit by the mudslide coming down. And it was the worst disaster that has ever occurred within the city and borough of Juneau. My mother was in the hospital for 2 weeks and then released from the hospital. She talked about it very rarely. My grandparents were Finnish immigrants. There's a lot of stoicism that goes throughout that culture. So they immigrated to Juneau late in 1913. My uncle Elmer and my grandfather were miners, and they both worked for the AJ mine. My mother was born on November 9th of 1914 and grew up here, went through high school here, and she obtained a secretarial job with a fellow by the name of Frank Dufresne, who was the head of the Alaska Fish Commission at that time. And he did all the arrangement for the funeral and everything else for her parents, which was absolutely amazing. She later married a fellow by the name of Doug Babcock, my dad, who was an early member of the Territorial Sportsmen, plus being one of the first Taku River rats. And he notably helped in some of the early experimentation for salmon and salmon eggs that led to DIPAC. Years later, when I went to school at Oregon State and then up to Fairbanks for my master's degree, where I took ichthyology and fisheries courses, our textbook was by Frank Dufresne, and it was called Alaska Fishes. I mean, it's absolutely amazing the webs that we turn, that we find out later, you know, and that end up surprising you. So I went to work in the Auk Bay Lab in 1969. There were not many women biologists. I think there were two when I started to work there. And I spent many a summer up in King Salmon in Bristol Bay. And I spent 7 years walking the beaches of Prince William Sound, working with the effects of hydrocarbons after Exxon Valdez oil spill. At any rate, it was just kind of a neat career, and I'm very proud of myself.
That was Malene Babcock for this week's Tongass Voices. You are listening to Juno Afternoon, live from your public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On Saturday, May 11th, from 8:45 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., a workshop on how to run for local office will be held at the Assembly Chambers in City Hall. The workshop is meant for those who are considering or planning to run for public office, as well as those who might want to campaign for someone else. It is being sponsored by the Juneau League of Women Voters, the City Clerk's Office, the Juneau Public Libraries, and the Juneau School District. And here to tell us more about it live in the studio are Luann and Kirsha, board members with the League of Women Voters. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio talking about this. Now, you're both with the League of Women Voters.
That's right.
That's
okay.
Correct.
You're board members.
I'm a board member, and Kirsha is our new president.
Oh, you're the new president.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you also the past president?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what I saw on the website.
I know.
That's what happened. You did such a good job. They're like, let's re-elect her.
I have such a hard time saying no.
she does a great job, and we love her. So
yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about the League of Women Voters and what you all do overall.
Yeah. Overall, I think one of our taglines is like helping democracy grow or something like that. But so locally, this is the League of Women Voters Juneau. So we don't tackle any of the huge, like big picture stuff. We can sign on to their platform, you know, the National League, the State League. But all of our efforts are really focused here in town. So this is one of our like kind of tentpole events that we have, which is getting people informed about what it takes to run for office and to encourage people to run for local office. And then we have some more stuff, like we do the candidate forum with KTOO in the fall. You know, when we get closer to the election, then hopefully everyone who attended this workshop is now on the ballot, and then they, you know, get their chance to talk. So it's really about educating voters and just encouraging participation.
Well, something must have worked, because I remember the last assembly election, we had a lot of people in that election.
I know. Yeah. That was...
There were like, I think it was 10. Was it 10?
Yeah.
Something
the
like
stage
that.
Was full.
It was
we were busting
full.
At the seams.
Yeah. And you all do a great job with that candidate forum, and we'll look forward to those. This is a big year, obviously, nationally as well as locally. But so that's kind of interesting. So let's talk about this workshop then. How did this come about? When did it start and why?
Oh, gosh, it's been around 10 years, somewhere in that ballpark.
Oh, wow.
that it's been an annual thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it is one of those things that's born out of a need where you have, you know, people can be really frustrated about local topics. And it's like, well, hey, if you want to get in there and mix it up, here's how. Like, you can, anybody can run, you know, as long as they're, you know, a member, you know, in good standing of the community, right? Like, so
I guess that's part of it, right? Like, people, there's a lot of, I mean, we do this with a lot of things, but there's a lot of you know, what would it be called, a couch quarterbacking, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like,
yeah,
why did you make that decision?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have never done that.
Well, like, yes. When you're finding out from the headlines, you've probably missed a whole slew of meetings of how we got there.
Right, right, right. And of course, full disclosure, your sister is a current assembly member,
and
Alicia Hughes.
You know what else? She's a former attendee of this workshop.
Well,
coincidence?
There you go. Okay. That's how it works.
It works.
Need a testimonial from her.
Yeah, there you go.
No, because it's really an interesting thing, because I think people get to the point where they're like, okay, what do I do? How do I go about doing this? I don't even have the first clue of what I need to do to get on a ballot, or do I need money to get on a ballot? Luann, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as far as the money goes, I think that you'd have to come to the workshop to find that out.
Oh, no, that's a big tease.
That's a big, big topic there.
Yeah, right. Functionally or literally, no. But practically speaking, you know, like how much
helps.
Do you need to raise, or where should you spend that money? So we have people talking about the process of like, here's how I campaign, here's what worked, here's what I would do differently.
So, yeah. And so, Luann, what we're talking about with this workshop is local elections, right? So we're talking about the assembly
and the school board.
Okay. Assembly,
yes.
And school board.
And I attended last year for the first time just as a member of the League of Women Voters, and I was blown away by the professionalism of the presenters. I mean, we have former and current, well, the League of Women Voters presidents, former and present, and current, and we have CBJ clerks. The whole clerk's office turns out for this, and they all participate and help with their piece of the pie, how much they know. We have a former deputy city manager attending this time and presenting, our current school superintendent. We have former and current school board members and assembly members, and it's all so informative. If you want to know about the meat and potatoes of running for office in Juneau, this is the place to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because, and so give us a little bit of a hint. What does it take? What does it take? Does it take guts?
Oh, it definitely takes guts. You're definitely putting yourself out there, because as soon as you file, it's public record. Everybody can see it. Immediately, you're going to get contacted by somebody in the press somewhere here in town, and they're going to be like, well, tell me more. Like, what are you campaigning for? Like, what are you running for? So, like, right from as soon as you file, you're kind of on the chopping block in terms of getting questions from every corner you can think of.
So I think part of it is being ready to be a public face, right? Like,
totally.
To put yourself out there. I know that KTOO News Department does profiles on each of the candidates and things like that. So it's an interesting thing to sort of put yourself out there like that.
Yeah, totally. And I would say it, you know, kind of probably piggybacking off of that. There's just a certain kind of level of organization. It doesn't mean that you have to have a whole staff, you know, of people working, but you kind of do have to have your strategy thought out a little bit, at least, you know. I mean, it's, of course, nothing teaches like doing, but I think, you know, having an idea of like, well, this is what I want to do, or this is how I'm going to pitch my new ideas that nobody's thought of before, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of having some idea of how you're going to get your message out there, and which is another thing that we cover.
Have either of you ever thought of running for local office?
I've definitely thought of it. I've had a few friends tell me that we're not allowed to have more than one Hughes scan.
Only one in the family.
Yeah.
Only one Hughes scan is allowed.
At a time. Yeah. So maybe someday Alicia will tag out.
Honestly, I was thinking about it before I went to the last one of these workshops. And then I went, oh, that's how much work is involved in being a school board member. Mm-hmm. So for me, I don't have tons of time right now. So that it was obvious to me that I would not be the right candidate at the moment.
And one of the things I know, too, is that, I mean, it's not like you're going into that particular office for the pay. Right.
Right.
It's really a service job. I mean, there's like a tiny like honorarium kind of, but
cover your gas.
It's not a salary.
Yeah.
For sure. And it really is community service. But the other thing that's important I want to talk about with this workshop is that if you don't feel like you're the person who can run for office, this is also a great workshop and opportunity for those who might want to help others.
Exactly.
Right. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I learned, for example, that it's really important to have someone for a treasurer, someone who knows about managing money and who can keep up with your books. And when there are donations made, they can track those and report those.
Yes.
Yeah, there are reporting requirements that you have to follow. And so I think it's good to have that piece of the pie covered. Yes.
Yeah, you want that support. You have to build a team, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And this could help a team member or even a campaign manager person who might be thinking about that sort of, you know, if you have a friend who says, I'm gonna run for office, you can be like the buddy who's like, yeah, I'm gonna help you.
Yeah,
right?
I'm gonna log in and do the paperwork every week or whatever, totally.
Yeah.
Because
like keeping track of all that stuff even on the local level must be because you're still raising money and you're spending money for, you know, I guess campaigning, right?
Yeah, right.
Doing all of those things and all of that. So give us the details on the dates and times and what we need to prepare in advance if we want to come to this workshop.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could cover that one. So it does take place on Saturday, May 11th, and it's 8:45 to 1:30 p.m. in the CBJ Assembly Chambers. And that address is 155 South Seward Street. And we do encourage you to register, although you don't have to do that. It is a free workshop. And if you do register, you can go to https junolwv.org/run/. And you can get all kinds of information at that site. And one advantage of registering in advance is that you'll receive a hard copy of our so-called toolkit, which has forms, references, and all kinds of how-tos so that you've got everything in writing. You don't have to take tons of notes during the workshop. Let's see. The workshop panels will cover, there are four panels, and they'll talk about the jobs of an assembly and school board member. Another panel will cover legal requirements for candidates. You'll learn about campaign basics in the third panel. And the fourth one is the biggie, preparing to run for local office. I think it's really worthwhile to sign up in advance, to register in advance.
But if you don't,
yes,
we'll take you.
We'll take you anyway.
Yeah, but it's nice to, but you'll get the packet at some point
exactly.
Anyway, right?
Yeah.
But you can.
We'll get it. We'll have it all printed out. We're saving trees, so we'll only print as many as we have registered. You're welcome to come, and that information will be on our website.
But you get that packet before you show up on Saturday.
Pick it up at the door. Yeah,
you pick it up at the door. Okay, because I was thinking people could prepare in advance. Or
They can if they browse the website
It's LW, on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the best way to get all this information is at junolwv.org. They'll have links to the other pages that Luann mentioned. You can get all the information. If you have questions, there's a specific email, runforoffice.lw. VJ. That's the League of Women Voters Juno. That's what that stands for. runforoffice.lwvj@gmail.com. So if there's questions that you might have, it'll get to one of the board members and they will be able to answer that. But you can also go and register at junolwv.org/run, which is really cool. It's a couple Saturdays from now. And I think that's what we need to say about it, right?
One more thing.
Ooh. Well, one more thing.
There will be snacks.
Oh, that's the most important thing. Well, 8:45 in the morning. I hope so.
Yeah, they better be, right?
I love it. Luann McVeigh and Kirsha Hughes-Scandies, thank you so much for coming in and sharing all about the upcoming How to Run for Local Office. Gwyneth Cheese for being here. Thank you so much.
Gwyneth Cheese.
Yeah. And now this week's Savory Moment.
Step in to the savory moment. It turns out there are two Michael Scotts. Michael Gary Scott is the protagonist of the sitcom The Office. The other Michael Scott is a composer of piano music known for his lyrical pieces of the beginner and intermediate variety, the kind you might encounter at music lessons. One of his pieces is a dreamy composition called Rainforest. Imagine a song that starts off slowly and quietly with a lot of long, drawn-out whole notes that create a peaceful mood. In the middle of the song, a cascade of notes tumble quickly, one after another, from measure to measure, mimicking, perhaps, the plunge of raindrops or the graceful sluicing of a waterfall. This tumbling and sluicing effect is achieved by combining two different rhythms. The right hand plays a three-note rhythm, also known as a triplet, which music teachers in Alaska count this way.
Blueberry, blueberry.
Underneath is a two-note rhythm in the left hand.
Huckleberry.
If you think it might be challenging to play those two disparate rhythms together, you're right. Given all those blueberries and huckleberries inside his song, it's reasonable to assume that Michael Scott is composing music about Southeast Alaska. Rainforest ends much the same way it began, with long, drawn-out whole notes that reflect the slow, peaceful pace of life among the trees. Instead of getting on your computer or phone to visit savorymoment.org for a new recipe, step outside and go pick some berries. Oh, and if you look for Michael Scott's music online, be prepared for a lot of references to The Office and its theme song, which coincidentally starts off with a piano solo, one that doesn't, however, contain a single blueberry. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kindred Post will be hosting their first ever summer kickoff tomorrow night, May 1st. It'll be at the Sandy Beach Pavilion Number 1 from 6:30 to 8:30 with DJ Icardi. Tressa Ferner, who is the new owner of Kindred Post, joins me now in the studio to talk about this awesome summer kickoff. And what a week, Tressa, to do it, because I heard there's like 8 ships this week coming in. So like, we know they've been coming one at a time, like over the last, you know, couple of weeks, but now they're here. And so it seems like a perfect time for us to enjoy one last, you know, Juno only kind of party. But Gwyneth Cheech, for being here today, thank you so much. Hi, Tressa.
Hello.
It's so good to see you. So let's talk about the party a little bit and where this idea came from.
Sure. Yeah. So like you said, cruise ships are coming in hot, and we were looking at the calendar, and this is the last no ship day, basically till like October. So we thought, you know, like it would just be really nice to come together as a community, and especially with like the whole tourism world, there's a lot of new people that have never been to Juneau before, and it feels crazy to start in a new place and a new job. And it just felt like a really nice way to sort of kick off this like really hectic season for a lot of us.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, it is one of the largest economies for our city, and we love it. There's sort of a love-hate relationship with it, really, right? But it's like we love it because it does bring, it brings a vibrant downtown. And, you know, I heard a statistic, though, that like last summer, one of the days, the highest day, there was like 22,000 people additional in Juneau. And that's like 2/3 of the population, which it makes it grow by so much.
Yeah.
Right. And I know there's people who like avoid downtown at all costs during the summer. But it's also vibrant because Kindred Post is right down there in the heart of it. And so I also want to talk about this because you are the new owner of Kindred Post.
Yeah.
Christy Nami Erickson sold you the business.
And she did.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, when did that transaction happen, and why did you want to take over Kindred Post?
Totally. Yes. No, it's very exciting. I officially took over in January. This has kind of been in the works for a while. And I guess, you know, a big reason I wanted to be involved with Kindred Post is I love it. I love it. I love this place, and I love the message that Kindred Post has. And I actually originally came to Juneau with tourism. So I have experienced kind of that moment of like, what is this place and what am I doing? And Juneau has been very life-changing for me. And so I just wanted to be more involved. And yeah, I love art. I love the people. I love the people that work there. And it's just been a really, really great experience so far, and really wonderful. Obviously, what Christy has built is incredibly impressive. And I'm excited to kind of carry on the legacy. And yeah, it's exciting.
Well, the cool thing, I mean, and Kindred Post, for those who don't know, tell us the address.
145 South Franklin Street, right across from the clock.
It's right there, right there in the heart of downtown. And what's beautiful about Kindred Post is that it is, it's the support of local artists, the support of local earring makers, jewelry makers, crafts makers, like all the different support. And obviously the First Friday events that y'all have, and you support, like I think last month you had Travis Clark Morris, who was in there, who was starting his woodcrafting furniture and toys. And I know this Friday you have a really cool event. Your store manager and also the MC of Juneau,
yes,
Kelsey Bryce Riker, will be performing along with another talented person who's a friend of the show, Taylor Vidic. And they're going to be doing, what are they going to be doing this Friday?
They're going to be doing what they do best. They're going to be singing. And we are going to enjoy it. So yeah, please come through. And yeah, we love to support artists.
Yeah. So. Is there plans for any kind of specific other events coming down, or is there certain, you know, items that you're looking to, is there, if an artist is interested in wanting to contact you?
Yeah, definitely. What, yeah. Yes. We love to hear from artists. If you are an artist and would like to be involved with Kindred Post, you can email us at hello@kindredpost.com and we'll get back to you. We do have a lot of people that email us, so we apologize. We might be a little slow in when we respond. As far as events go, this is actually the 10th year of Kindred Post. So we are planning
what?
on, yeah,
10 years? Exciting.
Can you believe it?
That's amazing.
I know. So we are planning, you know, some kind of anniversary party. We don't know what that looks like yet, but I'm sure we'll bother you when the time comes. So
and there'll be a first Friday event attached to it, I'm sure.
Of course, yes.
But this event we're talking about right now is tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night.
Tell us a little bit more about this summer kickoff. What can we expect to be happening tomorrow?
Sure. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. First of all, it is supposed to be sunny. So if that's enough,
that's
I think that should get you out there. We're going to have a bonfire. We'll have volleyball going. We'll obviously have music by DJ iCardi. And we'll also have an Easter egg hunt of sorts. It won't be eggs, but it's, I don't know what to call it, scavenger hunt. We're going to be hiding things around the beach where you can get little freebies, coupons, free stickers, where you can come into Kindred Post later and cash those in. So it'll be fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I heard, is there going to be some food?
There's food. Yes. Oh, I forgot the most important part.
I heard there's going to be some pancit.
We got 40 pounds of pancit. We got plenty of pancit. So come hungry. We'll also have other things, you know, charcuterie boards. I'll have some drinks. I also do want to mention that this is BYOB. So if people are wanting to drink, you'll have to bring your own supplies. We won't be supplying that.
I got you. That makes sense. Again, it's the Kindred Post Summer Kickoff. It's tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 1st. It's at Sandy Beach Pavilion number 1. It's from 6:30 to 8:30. There's going to be music, games, prizes, a bonfire, all kinds of good stuff. It's the last dance before the summer season kicks in, right? It's last dance. So get yourself down there. And first Friday events, of course, you'll see Taylor and Kelsey doing what they do best. Yes, singing Friday night at Kindred Post, right there across from the clock downtown. Tressa, it's so great to have you in here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Gunnith Jeesh. For today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, a look ahead at some weekend events from the City Museum, Juno Community Bands, and more. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Don't forget to tune in this Friday at 2 o'clock. We're going to be on the air an hour earlier with the sort of kickoff celebration of KTO's 50th anniversary celebration. So you can listen at 2 o'clock on Friday and also join us in the studio at 4 o'clock for an open house here at 360 Egan Drive. There's going to be all kinds of stuff on the walls and all kinds of stuff. You can meet everybody. It's going to be really cool. So you can come and join us for that. It's Juno Afternoon at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Theme music is by Indian Agent. The Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.